Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts Jay
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes, amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salerno.
Yeah, we love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're gonna make
How
me
are you
break.
Exposing me?
Because you're gonna make me break.
Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. This is episode 146 and I'm your host Jake, and I'll be covering all the action of match day 9 alone, because this episode was not planned, to be honest with you. Matt and I were planning on kind of giving you guys a rundown on match day 10 due to the packed nature of the fixture list. However, due to the fact that so much happened this match day, I decided to take it upon myself and give you guys a little bit of a bonus episode, an unorthodox episode, to be honest. We won't be following the typical structure, and it's going to be a lot more brief, but I guess it's better than nothing. I'd like to take a moment to welcome our latest spotted and addition to the family, Michele Pietro Paolo. Welcome to the family. Get on that WhatsApp group immediately, brother. You missed out on a lot of action. Last match day, it was hilarious. Let me know if that link works. If you guys would like to become patrons and support the show and keep the show going for as long as possible, you can do so by following the link in our bio and signing up to our Patreon. It's only $3.99 per month and you'll be doing us a massive solid. All the money we make is always reinvested into this podcast. So yeah, let's get straight into it. So first of all, we should start off by saying that there was beautiful weather in Bologna, as the match had been postponed by the mayor of Bologna due to forecasted floods. However, these floods didn't seem to happen, and now Milan need to face Napoli without Theo Hernandez and Reinders midweek. That's going to be quite a challenge, considering how Napoli have grown accustomed to winning and winning ugly, to be honest with you. So, not very fortunate for Milan. And now they've got this game in hand that will kind of linger on in their minds for quite a while. And we all know how that went for Inter in the season that Milan actually won the league maybe 2 or 3 seasons ago. It happened to be against Bologna as well, and that's the game where Radu made the mistake, essentially giving Milan the league. Juventus 4, Inter 4 was the talk of the town, as the Derby d'Italia proved to be quite unique. I can't remember the last time I saw such a high-scoring affair in the Derby d'Italia, and I predicted a 1-1 draw going into this. However, 4-4 was an excellent watch for the neutral. In this game, Inter favoured a more structured, possession-based build-up, while Juve kind of leaned on dribbling and dynamic play between the lines. Motta prioritised quick, incisive attacks, as Juve actually do rank very highly in the dribbling attempts in Serie A, whereas Inter rely more on calculated build-up and positional discipline. Inter have been the same for quite some time, but never quite this leaky, to be honest with you. It was Zielinski who drew first blood with a penalty, replacing Calhanoglu and doing so brilliantly. Vlahovic equalised shortly after Kabal chipped a ball to McKennie, who squared it to Vlahovic. This was an absolute peach of a goal. Weah gave Juve the lead shortly after. He was set up by Conceição, who's become very good at dribbling in the pockets. Mkhitaryan equalised with a lovely solo effort from outside the area, low and hard. Zielinski scored his second penalty to give Inter the lead, and then Yildiz came off the bench to score 2 goals and become a hero instantly in the eyes of Juve fans. Now, I've got quite a few observations from this game. The first one being Juve's defensive disarray. Since the loss of Bremer, it seems that they haven't only lost Bremer, but they've actually lost 2 defenders, as Danilo can't seem to hold his own without him. Adam, our guest on the podcast 2 episodes ago, you can go and check out his Juve collection on our YouTube account, criticised Danilo on our episode, saying that he's not quite good going forward and not quite solid defensively anymore. basically the fact that he can't really play as a fullback anymore kind of, you know, removed his primary position, right? Nowadays, he's forced to play center back, and that's not really his role. And to be honest, since Adam's words, he's given away two penalties, and this one was so clumsy. He had so much time to get to the ball, but ended up kicking the opponent very clumsily. Kalulu had a similar rush of blood to the head, giving away a very cheap penalty as well. A bit of a disaster over there for Juve. I think it needs to be Gatti and Kalulu going forward, though, as Danilo doesn't really seem deployable as it stands. He has a lot of work to do. I think that Motta's tactical adjustment, which saw Weston McKennie positioned to exploit spaces between Inter's lines, was a very clever move. And this shift allowed them to get another assist later on, not to mention the first assist on Vlahovic, which was absolutely beautiful. We got to see Mbangulo as a false nine, which was very interesting. Looks like everyone's getting a shot at false nine. We've already seen Weah in that position. Personally, I can't wait to see Pinsolio as a false nine. Yildiz, of course, came on and proved just how mature he is for his age. The fact that he's been representing the Turkish national team and shouldering all that responsibility really shows he's such a young player, and he plays with so much authority, and he really took the team on his shoulders in the biggest game of the season, perhaps, and really brought them back out of the gutter into it. An unsung hero this game was Di Gregorio, who made a couple of good saves when Juve were down and seemingly out at 4-2. The best save he made in a Juve shirt, potentially, came just before Yildiz's first goal. So it didn't seem like it at the time, but he really kept them in the game. Zielinski tends to prefer a more advanced role, but he did pretty well this game to replace Çalhanoğlu. I think that he was very professional. He executed his penalties super calmly and expertly. He asked to be substituted halfway through the second half because of muscle fatigue, claiming that the condition of the pitch was not too standard either. I think that Inter were the disappointed of the more disappointed side of the two, of course, considering they threw a two-goal lead. Inzaghi said that the neutrals must have enjoyed this game, but they did not. He went on to say that Inter could have scored 8 goals this game, and it's true, they could have scored more. But Juve did very well, they kept everything together, and they never quite gave up. And this is the second time this season we saw them kind of, you know, dig into the trenches to pull out a point. The first one, of course, being in the Champions League. But yeah, if you have to look at the statistics, it was quite a balanced affair, with Inter edging it ever so slightly. Their XG, of course, of almost 3 with 2.99, while Juve's XG was 2.17. Of course, the penalties would have helped Inter in that regard. But it is very good for Juve and very promising to see them not give up or be demoralized after giving away 2 horrible penalties, 2 cheap penalties. But yeah, they worked as a team and they got over it. This was the match of the week by far, and I'm sure you guys enjoyed it. Let us know what you think. Another fun game this weekend was Fiorentina 5, Roma 1. Fiorentina are gelling, and it's becoming so beautiful to watch. Keane is thriving. That first goal was brilliant, where he kind of backheeled the ball in the build-up play to a teammate and then ran in and finished off the move himself with a beautiful finish. Adli is saucing. He's playing really well. Bove delivered a massive fuck you of a performance against his former team. They didn't even have Goodmans in this game. No Goodmans and no problem. It's almost as though he's inspired his teammates and he's playing through their bodies. Cataldi is one of the most underrated coups of the last transfer market. I think he's playing so well as Fiorentina's metronome, and he's going pretty much unsung. It was his 2 goals last game that put him on the map and people started actually noticing him. Meanwhile, not many positives on the other side for Roma, as Celik has proven to be a liability for the second game in a row. He was dribbled past 5 times this game. He didn't show enough desire when clearing the ball, clattering above and giving away a penalty. Yeah, not a good showing from him at all. Hermoso had a bit of a disaster as well. He played 35 minutes. He won 1 duel out of 6. He got a double yellow in 5 minutes, and he was sent off. Mancini had a bit of a disaster as well, with one dual one in the whole game. Hummels came on for his debut after joking around on Instagram saying that he's ready and he's just waiting and he's at the coach's disposal. He came on and scored an own goal immediately. For me, the only positive in this game for Roma was Manu Kone, who came on for Cristante. He's super. He did actually score a goal this game, and I think that he should be starting in the near future. Perhaps under a different manager, but for now, Juric hasn't been sacked yet, let's just say that. Zvilar was beaten 5 times this game, yet he still managed 6 saves in the box, so it wasn't all that disastrous from him. Kind of a mixed bag of a performance, and I can't help but feel bad for Dovbik up front, who's totally isolated and has no one to play him in behind, and is just playing alone up there, you know, so frustrating. Apparently, after the match, there was a dressing room bust-up between Juric and Mancini, and about 60 Juve fans, Roma fans waited outside the stadium to confront certain players. I believe Dybala and Pellegrini were amongst those who went and confronted them. However, yes, apparently the Juric and Mancini bust-up was indeed quite physical. We'll see. I can't see, to be honest, Juric staying on as the manager. I'm sure that the Friedkins will be replacing him, as in Italy there's a bit of a culture where when your team gets absolutely demolished, you kind of punish the coach, right? You sacrifice the coach as kind of a gesture of kind of like to show that we don't stand for this. We value and respect our club too much to allow this to happen. Someone needs to take the blame, and it's always the manager who does. However, we have seen a bit of a change in this trend recently, with Gotti, for example, for Lecce last week, getting smashed and staying on. But yeah, I think this might be the best Fiorentina we've seen in the Rocco Commisso era. Shout out to the sporting director Daniele Prade. He left many deals till deadline day and proved to get actually some good bargains over there. Adli, Cataldi and Bove were all deadline day bargains, to be honest. He wouldn't have managed to get them at that price throughout the transfer market. Maybe teams would have actually tried to haggle, but the fact that they were desperate left an opportunity for Fiorentina to pounce, and they did just that. The only flop from the Mercato so far for Fiorentina is actually Pongracic. But Comuzzo's been doing so well, and his rise as one of the most exciting young centre-backs in Serie A has made people forget about their record defensive signing in Pongracic. Yes, so all smiles in Florence right now. On the other side, we have the league leaders, Napoli, who beat Lecce 1-0. Lecce played much better this game than their previous smashing. But Napoli, as I mentioned at the start of this podcast, have grown accustomed to winning ugly, and they're enjoying it, right? Meret had only 1 save to make this game, and I think the closest Lecce got to scoring was actually from a corner, with Bascherotto and Gaspar coming quite close. Di Lorenzo is absolutely thriving under Conte. He scored 2 times this game, with one of them ruled out for offside. A fantasy football coup for all those who went for him. And nice to see him celebrating by imitating the VAR gesture. Lukaku displayed a fantastic first touch this game towards the end, taking it down and cutting it back to a teammate who failed to score. However, he also did have a comical miss where he skied it, and I think the ball might have even left the stadium. It was absolutely terrible. I couldn't help but notice Conte whispering in Dorgu's ear at the end of the game. God knows what he was telling him, but I'm sure it was a bunch of sweet nothings about how he'd love to coach him at Napoli. Yeah, we'll see how that develops, if it does. But yeah, Lecce this game were kind of in a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 formation. They seemed to be more organized, more structured. However, it does look like they need a miracle to score this season. I doubt they'll lose much sleep over a 1-0 loss to Napoli, which came especially from an ugly goal, seeing Di Lorenzo having to walk the ball into the back of the net, kind of rebounding it over the keeper. It's Verona up next for Lecce, and that's going to be a very telling game, because this is a game where Lecce need to go in and try to get 3 points out of it, because they can't keep going like this. It's looking dire for them. And fortunately for them, a few teams are struggling as well, so they're still very much alive this season. Speaking of spankings, Atalanta spanked Hellas Verona 6-1. Atalanta are in full flow and seem unstoppable. Last week as well, they had a bit of a party as well. They carried that on this week and they absolutely overwhelmed Hellas Verona. Derun got a rare goal and he always enjoys them. Retegui added another two to his account. He's the top scorer of the season. Lookman looked sensational and scored twice. CDK scored an Ilicic-esque goal over there, curling it into the top corner with his left boot. Absolutely beautiful. The only positive for Hellas Verona this game was that Amin Sar scored on his debut. He's 23 years old and Swedish. He scored a great goal to make it 5-1 at the time. And I guess this must have felt like getting your first A in a school exam, rushing home to tell your parents, only to find out that they are having a marriage-ending argument. Lazio beat Genoa 3-0. They breeze past them as their impressive form continues. They currently lead the Europa League standings and are really finding their groove. Zaccagni came down with a fever and had to miss this one. Fortunately for him, Noslin pulled his weight and scored a fantastic goal, twisting and turning through Genoa's defence, perhaps the goal of the week this week. Pedro scored another goal. It looks like an extension might be on the table for the Spaniard as he leads the team well and has even been deployed as a 10 under Baroni. He is on great form, scoring in the Champions League as well, in the Europa League as well, sorry. And yes, I think that he is quite a useful jolly this game. Quite a few useful players off the bench for Lazio, with Vecino coming on and scoring as well. I think Balotelli couldn't come any sooner for Genoa as they're totally out of options. I think Gaston Pereiro needs to become match fit as soon as possible. For Genoa this game, Melegoni had to come on and was still rusty. He came on in the 70th minute to replace Ankeye, who had come on to replace Thorsby. Melegoni only managed two passes while losing half his duels. Badel also got pushed around when coming on. It's a shame because he's their best midfielder technically. And tactically, when it comes to his awareness and his intelligence, he's a level above the likes of Miretti and everyone else, but he does struggle to keep up with the physicality and the pace of the game. So yeah, it's a shame that Genoa don't really have any other options to replace him. Norton Cuffey looked decent for Genoa when he came on, and he had their only dangerous chance, to be honest. So yes, Lazio's substitutes did give them a second wind as Genoa's weakened them. In fact, two of Lazio's substitutes scored late. These were, as I mentioned, Vecino and Pedro. Monza drew to Venezia 2-2. They had to fight back from behind and had to play the last 10 minutes a man down as Bondo was sent off. It was Ellerton who opened the scoring for Venezia, with Kyriakopoulos equalising with a solo effort, only for Svoboda, the centre-back of Venezia, to put them ahead again with a header, and then Juric scoring an uncharacteristic goal with his foot. Parma played Empoli and came 1-1. It seemed as though Fazzini had opened the scoring, but it was indeed a Woyo Koulibaly own goal. An unlucky start to the season for him. He's a very good player, but he's already seen an own goal and a red card, even though his performances have been pretty impressive. The substitute, Charpentier, for Parma equalised in the 80th minute after a Valeri cross found its way to him. The first half of the game was quite an even one, but Empoli gave up playing in the second half and it was all Lecce. Pecchia is under quite a lot of criticism from the Lecce faithful as he took out Dennis Mann at halftime and said that he's not experiencing a good moment as it stands. Last game as well, he didn't even start him and brought him on in the second half. This game he also started without Mihala and new boy Mandela Keita. There's a lot of criticism going from the fans, and Pecchia is going to have to do a lot better to safeguard his job, because as it stands, there's a whole lot of complaining going on about Pecchia. And it's true, they have quite a nice team, and it's a shame that you never get to see their best players playing at the same time. Udinese beat Cagliari 2-0, and it was Makumbu's first half red card which set the tone for Cagliari, who fell victim to Lorenzo Lucca and Keenan Davies. It was nice to see Lucca celebrating like the legend Toto Di Natale, honouring his colours, of course taking flight, doing the whole airplane celebration that Di Natale used to always do. Torino beat Como 1-0, thanks to a 75th minute winner from the 19-year-old Swede Allier Ingi, if that's how you pronounce his name, or Ingi, I would assume. This was his first goal in Serie A. Lovely moment for him, lovely moment for Torino. Of course, it also took some Vanya Milinkovic-Savic heroics to get them over the line. So yes, as it stands, of course, Napoli are in first place with 22 points, shortly followed by Inter with 18 points and Juve with 17. Milan, of course, with the game in hand, are down in 8th place with 14 points. And in last place, we have Lecce and Venezia tied with 5 points each, and then Genoa just above them with 6 points, also in the relegation pool. The season has been extremely exciting, and I can't wait to record a proper episode in a few days' time with Matt. As I mentioned, the approach will be different in the next episode, as we'll be running down the scores and the events of match day 10 a little bit more briefly. And then we'll go on and talk about how each team has performed so far. I think with 10 matches, it pretty much gives us a good idea as to where the teams stand and how they'll perform for the rest of the season. So we might even hit you up with some predictions over there. Thank you very much, guys. This has been very brief. I'm not one who enjoys solo podcasts, to be honest with you. I much prefer someone to bounce off of. And I am missing Matthew quite dearly over here. But I did feel like this match day needed a bit of coverage. Thank you.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.